here we are, fresh out of the Lion's Gate on 8-8, getting back into the swing of things of consistently uploading and editing podcasts. This one I felt so inspired to share quickly because the conversation just really tickled my heart, made me laugh and think about all the good memories that I've had with some of the really incredible people that I've met along the way. So, you know, I know I had said in the previous episode that this episode was going to be solo cast, but I'm going to hold off a little bit longer for that one. There's still just so much I want to fill you in on about July and the road ahead. Quite literally, I leave to travel cross country to move to LA in exactly about 2 weeks. So I'm going to save that solo cast episode. So today I'm sharing with you an episode with my friend and actually the person who produced the intro and outro to Radio Amenti. His name is Mike Costaini. I met Mike, 6 years ago, probably a really long time ago. I met him through an ex-boyfriend of mine, and I don't remember exactly how we connected, probably through music, something like that. But I always thought he was just like a wonderful guy. And he's kind of like popped in and out of the field. And we have a lot of mutual friends, which you'll hear us talk about in this episode. And, you know, he's just a really lovely person. It's funny, you know, thinking about this time that I've spent living in Asbury Park, kind of coming to a close for now. Who knows if I'll come back after my year in LA is up. But Asbury really is a vortex all its own. You know, it's this strange little portal of musicians and mystics and kind of the land of misfit toys. That's how I call it. And the people that live in this area are just so unique and special with that kind of like New Jersey grit, but also like really tapped in. And Mike is one of those people, just very tapped in, this hidden gem in New Jersey. And I'm really excited to share his work with you beyond what we talk about here, which is the best tarot deck. Mike's music is really cool. He's just like a polymath, multifaceted, really awesome guy. It's a little bit about Mike Costaini. Mike produces art and music and resides in the weird town of Toms River, New Jersey. He is an enthusiast of magic, Kabbalah, and psychotherapy. He works to find realistic connections with these concepts in art and collaborative projects like his latest endeavor, Best Tarot. And here's a little bit about Best Tarot. Best Tarot is the product of 40 professional artists, amateur doodlers, and people who haven't attempted to draw since grade school art class. These folks were given 60 seconds to look at a classic tarot card, an unwieldy black marker, and a sheet of paper. Then, they had to draw the card they had been looking at using only their memory as a reference, some artists executing most of the 60-second reference onto paper, and some failing beautifully. the beautiful failures. Best Tarot is really an incredible work. And I don't just say that because I have a few of my drawings in there. I say that because the exercises that you'll learn about in this talk and how it came to be are its own very certain type of magic. The deck is incredibly spooky accurate. Any tarot deck can be when you're imbuing your intention and will and desire into it and slicing into the breadth of time. But ever since I've been using my own deck, the readings have been spooky accurate. So anyway, there's a lot of giggles in this one, a lot of good feelings, a lot of good information, a lot of good stuff. Please do yourselves a favor and follow Mike on Instagram at dadmagnet, D-A-D-M-A-G-N-E-T, and get yourself a copy of Best Tarot because you won't regret it.
Welcome to Radio Amenti, embracing the eternal now, where minds and timelines merge, inspiring synchronicity, awakening potential, and making sense of change.
So here we are on the Lionsgate portal.
Oh, yeah.
So happy to have you on. It's kind of funny to have you on here, how meta, because you helped me with the intro and outro music for the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Had a good time recording that. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so much I want to talk to you about, but I am so curious because, you know, the tarot has become kind of an interwoven part of your life over the last, what, like, year? 2 years?
Yeah, maybe a little over a year.
A little over a year. So how did you start getting interested in tarot?
I think it was like it's a pretty long fragmented journey. But I mean, if we were to go way far back, my mom had a tarot deck that made its way into my room. And upon shuffling it and trying to read with it, I realized I had no idea what anything meant. So like after you know, a month of like pretending I could read tarot and then like failing, I feel like those images got like imprinted on my mind somehow. No way to quantify that. No way to actually like prove that that's what happened. But I feel like that was like my true beginning into it. But not until I think, like I said, maybe like a little more than a year, I started reading with friends, just like messing around with a reference book. And I think, it started to reveal itself as like a really, really efficient way to communicate with someone, a really good icebreaker and a good reason to like talk about stuff that you normally wouldn't. So, it became a tool for me essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing with tarot too, is that you can use it so many different ways as a system of self-inquiry, or, you know, some want to use it as divination, but I think, you know, ultimately, right, it helps you really understand yourself and relate to others because we're all going through the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was like a huge part that was attractive to me. I'm like, this could give me, like, I suck at talking to people. So I was like, this could be like a good reason to like sit down and like talk to someone or have someone talk to me about something, you know, without engaging in small talk and like working through all of that. We could just throw cards on the table and be like, okay, this is weird. Let's start talking about something.
Yeah, completely. Do you find, you know, typically like there's all different types of spreads to use, but like say you're having a conversational icebreaker with someone in a tarot reading, do you have a typical go-to spread that you use?
I think like lately I just pull one card and see and just try to get everything we possibly can out of it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You need more information, you pull another one. But I think lately I've just been pulling cards in a linear succession and then eventually forming a circle on the table and then pretending there's like a cycle that we have to figure out. So it's kind of like a puzzle between two people. And that seems to be like the most interactive.
Oh, I love that. That's so fun.
Yeah. And it helps a lot with like inverted cards or cards that people don't like a lot, because then you could look at it in terms of a cycle and be like, well, you know, how do we make sure this corrects itself the other way around? Like, how do we make this card that's inverted not inverted? Like, okay, let's pay attention to the other ones and see what lessons they have, and then keep on going around the circle.
Totally. That's so helpful, because I mean, even when I used to do oracle readings, people would be like, don't tell me the bad stuff. Am I gonna die? Is this forever?
Yeah. Is this forever? Yeah.
Like the kid at the dentist.
That's a perfect, yeah. Yeah, you know what? Tarot reading can be like going to the dentist. I don't deny that.
Yeah. And an unexpected but very appropriate metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, I've been working with your new deck, Best Tarot, since
cool.
Thank you so much for gifting it to me.
Yeah, of course.
But it's so incredibly potent and really accurate.
Okay.
But I also think that it's been nice to reconnect to the tarot, because before, you know, and we'll get into this, obviously, the exercises and what led to the inspiration of it, but I kind of put the tarot down because I found myself always fucking playing the Five of Pentacles.
It wanted you to know. It needed to tell you something.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to put this to bed until I stop pulling this damn card. But funny enough, I wound up pulling it the night that we did the drawing experiment.
Yeah. You drew a beautiful rendition of that card. Big fan.
Thank you.
Big fan of that.
But yeah, the experiments that led to Best Tarot coming to fruition are really so therapeutic. And I'd love to kind of talk about that process and what inspired it. And obviously, I'm sure, you know, Richie had a hidden hand in that to a degree.
Oh, yeah. No hidden hands with Richie Brown. I think he's somehow influenced, I think, like a good chunk, maybe 80% of the creative work that I do. Is at least texted or emailed to him first before I add more to it. So he's my producer, I think. Or we might be each other's editorial staff. We both send each other stuff. So so how everything came to fruition, we had a New Year's party. It wasn't even a party, it was maybe like 7 or 8 people. And I wasn't really drinking. Or I had stopped drinking maybe a year and change ago. So like parties are just different for me now. So I just try to figure out ways to entertain myself and like bring other people in on the fun. And I don't even think I started this, but it just started evolving over the night where people started drawing Pokemon from memory. Like, you know, weird distorted Pikachus. And like, it was just bizarre. I still have all the papers too. I should scan them and send them to people because it's pretty ridiculous. But, my friend Pete had drawn a Pokemon known as Chansey. I don't know if you're familiar with them at all.
I am, but I don't know. I can't think of Chansey offhand.
Well, it's kind of a deep cut, I guess, for some people. But I guess the content isn't that important as much as like he tried and failed so horribly. It stuck with me and was so effective that I was just like enamored with this Chansey for a good week. I couldn't stop staring at it. I'm like, I need to get this tattooed on me. What do I do with this? And I guess it cross-pollinated in my mind, and maybe a dream or maybe a daydream or something happened where I'm like, I need someone to draw a tarot card from memory. And like, I guess we just took off from there. Like, what's the best way to do that? Have someone look at it, turn it over. And then, it evolved into that party that we wound up having, when we were all sitting around the dining table and drawing them and stuff. I guess it just evolved. It evolved from there, where we would just have parties where people would sit around dining tables and, try drawing tarot from memory, and then, stockpile this actual deck that we're able to format and print and turn into Best Tarot.
It's so good. It's just the thing that I love so much about it is the celebration of the imperfection of it, because it's very human.
Yeah. I wish I could somehow pack, like, this is the best thing I got at the moment, but like, I wish I could package that feeling of like vulnerability of not knowing how to draw something, or like missing symbolism, or not remembering something, but like trying your best to do it. You know, that feeling of like, okay, I think I'm done. I think I completed this. And then like knowing that you didn't do it correctly, but walk away with this awesome, you know, terrible drawing of the Knight of Wands, like just staring at you. It's the project definitely had its own indescribable feeling that I hope emulates and resonates with people reading with the deck.
Definitely. Yeah, it's hard not to feel joy when you look at some of them, like the cover image. Brandon's that's the Knight of Wands.
Yeah, I still I haven't talked to him about that yet. I don't know, he must know he made the cover.
Yeah, he's been tagged in it.
Because I didn't even know he did it. It was hidden. It was folded, hidden under a pizza box. And I'm like, someone didn't want me to see this.
That's so Brandon, too. That's so meta.
but yeah, just like that feeling that I had on New Year's, I'm like, I was enamored with it. I'm like, I can tell by the way this horse is facing that it was the Knight of Wands, but this so is not the Knight of Wands.
Yeah, like a little worm.
Yeah, oh, it's beautiful.
But there's something so interesting too about the cards everybody picked, because even in the experiments, right, like you had us picking the cards at random. It's not like we got to choose the one that we wanted.
Yeah, it was random at first until, you know, we had to start getting cards done to complete the deck. You can't really pull from 78 cards when we only need the Emperor left or something. But But yeah, that we did pull it at random. Which, yeah, it's so bizarre because, yeah, you pulled the Five of Pentacles, and that was, you said that was like a transformative experience for you, right? Like having to draw that card that was like stalking you pretty much.
Completely, because that card had been stalking me since I was in Costa Rica and had this like really challenging ayahuasca trip. Ooh. And I remember pulling it on the beach with my friend and being like, God damn it. And then literally almost every card reading I kept getting it, and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna kind of settle into this. But then I think I literally had said before I pulled the cards, I really don't want to get the Five of Pentacles. And then I did.
Mm.
And drawing it was so therapeutic, and compounded with that night, because just the whole activity of all of us being there and creating and talking about this process,
yeah,
was transformative.
Yeah, like it was a strange, like, I guess the way I look at tarot in general is it's a vantage point. It gives you a peak to stand on to look down at certain things in your life, whether it be emotions or concepts you're working through. And that night, I feel like, was a vantage point of the vantage point. And people were just pulling cards that were so relevant to their life and how, you know, they are seeing things at the moment, that I'm curious. I mean, there's no way to truly quantify it, but I'm curious, you know, how that affected people. And if they, like, for instance, like our friend Damon pulling the Four of Pentacles, you know, he's a very structured, responsible individual, at least what I get from him. I'm wondering if that resonates with him, or if he sees the Four of Pentacles down the line and be like, oh, I drew that, I know what that means now. If it's like a compounding of, you know, those hidden symbolisms and concepts.
Completely. I know it deeply affected Casey. We actually went for a walk yesterday, just a walk and talk. And we're talking about how, just again, capturing the feeling of that night and how special that was, and how, like, she's like, I wish we could even just go to the beach and do something like that again. It's just like, God, it feels so far away that we could gather in groups and safety.
Right, right.
But even her experience with it felt very transformative, she had shared, so.
Yeah, she drew the death card, I believe. Is that, yeah, right? Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah, she did a great job.
Yeah, and it was funny because she had said that, you know, kind of a similar to my haunting of the Five of Pentacles and the drawings or reading she had been doing for herself, she kept getting death and the devil card. Mm. And, you know, I actually, the devil card's one of my favorites in the deck.
Oh, same.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear your take on it.
So.
Both. So devil and
devil. Well, I think death is. I think right off the bat, you know, it's like the transformation. It's like it could be a death of ideas, a death of old ideas, you know, a process or beginning of a process into a renewed way of thinking. I like when death comes up and spreads, because it's kind of like a pairs with card. If you put it next to something, you can kind of tell, you can say like, if you find death next to another card, you're kind of coming from that and you're transforming from that point, or you're looking to transform into something if a card comes after it. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. It's like a solve at coagulate.
Right. Right. And the devil, I think it's like one of the funnier cards, because it's just such a ridiculous looking devil. Yeah. And he's doing the as above, so below. Like I could talk about the symbolism, and I guess I should, just for context.
Yeah.
You know, holding the flame, holding enlightenment and knowledge downward, and the chains on the people's necks being loose enough where they can get out. I think that it's a beautiful and funny depiction. I think that there was a saying, it's like, if the devil is the adversary to God, your God isn't big enough. Meaning, like, the devil is of God, it's of the world that he created, and there's a reason for it. So creating an adversary for yourself can be damaging, but it's also important to recognize that we do that in our daily lives, that we create something to hold ourselves to. We believe our own lies, we believe others' lies, but it's all, I think, in the sake of pragmatism. And I think it's an important card to reconcile with and embrace, because when you get that inverted devil, you know, that means you're believing those lies too much. You're putting too much stock in your own reality opposed to living your own life. So I think that's the devil card in a nutshell for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important to realize, like, one of, you know, not that necessarily the Roadrunner is a devil, but one of my favorite Richie Brownisms is, I remember, like, years ago, we were talking about, like, Looney Tunes for some reason, and how the coyote almost needs the Roadrunner to have a sense of purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like he's continually chasing this thing and trying to kill this thing and get this thing. But if he didn't have that thing, he would have no sense of purpose. And if we look at, not necessarily that our fears or darkness gives us a sense of purpose, but it offers contrast so that I think you either love that much harder or feel that much deeper. It's great. I mean, again, even piggybacking off of that, isn't like looking at the devil card, right, and its symbolism and all of kind of what it ties to, the polar opposite of that is the lover's card.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. But I think there's like polar opposites within both of those cards, which I think is the most interesting concept of the tarot, is that I think it was said that, and this is getting a little more into the esoteric information, but every major arcana in the tarot is Father Chakma and Mother Bana disguised in different ways. So I think like the devil, at least in our culture, because you know how God-fearing and you know, Christian under and overtone based we are, I think the devil is the strongest representation of our dualities, just that seem to be ingrained in us. Because I mean, you ask people, like, or if you bring up the tarot, they're like, oh wait, isn't that the devil? And you're like, what? no, it's a bunch of cards. Like, isn't that evil? Like, that's immediately what they go to.
Yeah.
So I think that the devil might be a really strong lesson in that respect.
Yeah, not to fear it. I love the one Gurdjieff quote. It's like, if you're meditating and the devil appears, make the devil meditate too.
That's great.
Yeah, because it's just, I don't know, like, I think so much of our limitations come from, whether it's cultural, religious, experiential traumas that cause us to have fear, like fear of death, fear of living, fear of things, fear of all of our phobias, you know, and they become that boogeyman that looks, and then you look at the devil card and you're like, oh, it's like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. That guy, really? Yeah.
I could get past this. Yeah. Do you have any cards in the deck that like you really connect with and find a resonance with?
I think it changes daily. I can never put a finger on, like, you know, what my favorite card is, but I think lately, like, maybe the Queen of Wands has been one of my go-to cards that I'm like, I always get excited to pull.
And what does she represent? So for people that, you know, aren't adept in the tarot.
Well, I mean, I guess the way that I've been reading it is, you know, nurturing the like relationships and projects that you feel most intensely about. She's kind of a symbol of your, you know, inner desires, like wands. The suit is more about, you know, passionate desire, you know, the feeling before creation of something. So I think like there's like a certain confidence to the Queen of Wands and nurturing aspect of the Queen of Wands that I don't see represented as strongly in the rest of the tarot. But again, ask me in 2 months and I'm like, the Queen of who? What?
Well, that's the most beautiful thing about it too, is like, you, the tarot is this such an alchemical thing, because you can look at it and see different symbolism every time you pick it up.
Yeah.
There's just, it's so rich in that.
Right. Are there any cards that you're feeling at the moment?
You know, I'm really trying to connect to the star energy.
Okay.
apparently, you know, my life path number is an 8. Here we are, 8-8. And
cool.
8, I could be wrong. Am I wrong here? 8 is the star in the major arcana, right?
8 is strength, but the star is 17. 1 + 7 = 8. And I think there are 8 stars in the sky on the star card. So,
yeah, somehow in numerology it makes sense because my birthday is April 17th. So right. Somehow they're both connected. But I mean, they both are appropriate because strength and the star, I think, are really good archetypal energies
for sure
to connect to right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the other thing too with Best Tarot, I have to say, before we get too far off track, is that I think. I love and also wish for more because the guidebook, you know, is two cards that really give you kind of like an empowering guide for you to make sense of the cards because your explanations are so succinct. So it's kind of interesting. Like, why did you choose maybe to not kind of like go into a guidebook and keep it so short and to the point?
I'm going to say mostly funding. I never know how well things are going to hit with people. And I just imagined two instances where I was able to get enough of these decks out to where I can print more, or I'm just going to be sitting with like a bunch of decks in my house, like boxes of decks that I wasn't able to sell. So don't have pity on me. I do crazy things for art. But I think like I also didn't want like an intimidating, you know, a bunch of words describing all of these cards. And I think what got me into understanding tarot better and kind of imprinting it into my life, as well as the Kabbalah, was reading the things that were less intimidating and having the most wiggle room to work with. The less words, the better. So I think it's a good jumping off point, or at least I perceived it as a good jumping off point to kind of release this deck in that way.
Definitely. Well, I hope that, well, I foresee this doing very well, but
Fingers crossed.
It would be really cool to have you expand further into a book. So
yeah, I hope you do. Yeah. I mean, I love that, what is it? The Pictorial Key to the Tarot by A.E. Waite. Like when he kind of describes the tarot in like maybe three different major arcanas in like 4 or 5 paragraphs. And he's a picture of the card. I would love to do something like that in the future, where it's kind of like a, you know, best tarot book.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. But I think the next project is, there's this deck called Amenti Oracle. I think I'm going to get people together and try to draw that and make best Amenti Oracle.
Well, I mean, that was the other part of that night though. The Oracle part became so much fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's something that needs to be explored immediately.
Yeah.
Is, people drawing oracle cards on the spot and then creating a deck and reading with them, because yeah, that was so special.
Yeah. And for context, I wish I could have written down the instructions of how that part came to be, but I think we were having so much fun drawing the tarot cards. We were like, more please.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember one of the ones that stuck to me, Brandon again, and for those listening, the Brandon that I'm referring to is Brandon Asraf. He's the lead singer of a band called Brick and Mortar, both our mutual friend for a long time. But he had drawn, what did he call it? The bullshit Batman.
Oh my God, it's so good.
But it was so good because I think up until that point, I never really thought about it. I don't know why I would have thought about it unless I was like doing a film analysis or something. But like that Batman's actually a piece of shit. He's the problem.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne is a billionaire and he's a false crime fighter and like, yeah.
He's working out his issues by beating people up.
Yeah, but that was so fun. Do you think you know, post-COVID, or even, you know, thank God for the fact that we have Zoom, but have you thought about maybe creating more workshops around these kind of projects?
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, I mean, I think the inspiration just needs to strike. And usually when I create something and I have mild success, I immediately want to do something else. And that thing that I immediately do sucks real bad. So so I need like a regulator, you know. I need to make a bunch of ideas and then kind of have a little test audience and and figure out what will be the most beneficial to the groups I'm working with. But even like you just saying that you were walking on the beach with Casey, I'm like, how cool would it be to draw tarot in the sand to wipe it away? As cheesy as that sounds, like, you know, formulating a relationship with a card, like a major or minor arcana, whatever it is, try drawing it in something that is immediately wiped away. I don't know.
I don't think that's cheesy at all. That just gave me like total, well, can we do that, please?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you're my test audience and we just worked something out. So maybe after we record this, we can work out a workshop together.
Perfect. Yeah, I think there's something special incorporating like the mandala aspect of things. Like you're not only connecting to this universal archetype that we all can walk in and out of at one point of our life, but also connecting to the impermanence of it by having it wash away.
Sure. And doing it on the beach, I mean, that's the ultimate wash away, I would say.
Your poem, you didn't know it. Oh man. So have you thought about, you know, because you're such a talented musician as well, I have to say. So I think I'd be remiss.
Oh, that's it's the truth. Way too kind.
But I'd be remiss not to kind of talk about that as well as part of the process, you know, and even your creative flow music wise, have you found that kind of working on these projects, looking into the Kabbalah, exploring the tarot, how has that shifted your creativity musically or artistically?
I think it's definitely shaped it for the better. I think when I was younger, music was just my way to communicate with people. Like, if I work really hard learning this instrument, like I would be able to sit in a room with people and like communicate some way, you know, with other musicians, like we'd be able to play something together. Cause I've always been like, as I'm messing up my sentences, I'm explaining how I'm not a very social person. So this is very, very appropriate. But I think the tarot, like I was saying before, it's like, you can break out these cards and just start talking to people. Music, you can break out your instrument and just start playing with people. So I think it's made a bigger umbrella for my creative life. Like, this is all about communication. And I think I didn't understand that in the beginning. I didn't understand that music was a way to get from point A to point B, not just creatively and career-wise, but like emotionally. And it's such a, you know, music hits you over the head with emotions. Like, how could I not think that? But I guess emotions in the context of sharing them with other people in the immediate moment, opposed to thinking about it in retrospect and analyzing. So I think that's just how my brain works. And I think tarot and Kabbalah was just another systemic way to bridge the gap between me and other people. And I think with my latest musical endeavor, I've been doing a lot of ambient music. And the story of how that came to be was me needing to make ambient music for someone else's project, and then me making music that was not anywhere near ambient. And people were like, Mike, that's not ambient. That's just weird. And I was like, is it? So I had to sit on it and be like, all right, they're right. That's pretty weird. And then I had to like take a step back and like remove myself from it and then create something that I had to just like touch it less, you know, I had to leave my mark on it less, and it wound up being closer to the ambient music that was needed for the project than what I had previously cooked up. So yeah, maybe the theme here is, now that I'm talking about it, is teamwork, you know, is like working with other people and truly understanding where they're coming from and what they're asking of you. And I'm tell me if I'm rambling. please interject.
No.
I'm just like,
you're not rambling at all.
Improvising thought.
I think you're really onto something, because there's something that happens between the dance between two people and two ideas where, you know, I always go back to the, because this has been like kind of a very fitting metaphor for COVID times and a lot of the conversations that I've had about just perception and the nebulousness of truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could both be looking at that stupid dress meme and you see gold and white and I see blue and black.
Right, right.
And we're both trying so hard to see the same thing, but then a third thing emerges. So I think that's the beauty of the creative process, where you're kind of like working out an idea where it's like, okay, this person wanted this. I've created this that's not that, but now what's the third thing that came from it?
Right, right. Man, so strange how that dress was like foreshadowing for the years to come.
I know. So oh my God. That dress was a potent omen.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like that rabbit duck thing, where it can be the rabbit, it can be the duck, it can be both. I always go to that too.
I'm not familiar
with
that
one.
No, I don't.
Oh my God, I'll send you a photo of it. But basically it's a drawing where if you look at it one way, it looks like a rabbit. But if you look at it another way, it looks like a duck.
Gotcha.
And you can see both, but some people see more rabbit than duck.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show our perception. And I think that ties into tarot, music, life, all of it.
I think it's a great point. I think what you just said about the third thing is not represented, I think, enough in our culture. And I think we're just finding that out.
Totally.
Is that a collective perception is like of the utmost importance for any kind of progress.
Completely. To all agree that it's going to be very hard to find like the one general agreement of consensus reality, but there's always going to be that third thing emerging from it all.
Sure.
But also the unexpected and the unknown. You know, I was just thinking about how, gosh, this dream had to be 5 years ago. No, 4 years ago. I think it was when Richie and I first started dating the first time in 2016. And I had this dream, the Oh Boy dream.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For people tuning in. So my ex-boyfriend, Richie, who I always reference, he is like our mutual good friend. As you can tell, we both have a lot of respect and love for him. But I had this dream of being in my old apartment where Richie was in a magic circle of VCRs. And at one point, all the VCRs started saying, oh boy. And Richie says, oh boy. It was something along those lines. I might be omitting a detail because it was so long ago. But for some reason, that really spoke to you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know what it was. But I think it was one of the first things Richie had mentioned to me when we were hanging out creating something. Mm. And it just like colored the rest of the hangout session or the creation session to where like we made this character and we were trying to think of a name for it. And it became Oh Boy, because it sounded like, you know, like a yokai or something. You know, it sounded like a weird demon.
Yeah.
But it very much, you know, Oh Boy is...
it's an old
person in a black and white movie being surprised. That's
yeah, totally. But then it became a thing, and again, like, it's weird how, you know, a dream shared with someone else then becomes a third thing, becomes another third thing. Because I remember when there was that performance, the Is performance, and Oh Boy came out, and that was one of the first times in a while you actually like performed on stage.
That was
right?
Like my coming back to performing in a weird way. And it was a very weird way to do it. yeah. And I guess I'll explain it a little bit if you want.
Yeah, please. I would love to.
So Richie was pretending to be this Bob Ross figure painting this canvas, and the canvas had a hole cut out with a person's face through it. And he was having a conversation with this canvas that was becoming sentient. And later on in the performance, the canvas would rip open and I would emerge, a person in a strange skin suit with a canvas on their head, like a big box head with two holes cut out. And I would rip myself through the canvas and I'd have all this paint on me and I'd throw stuff into the crowd and act like this weird agent of chaos. So it was a weird way to go back into performing. But yeah, that was the beginning of the Oh Boy character.
Oh, that was such a good character too.
Yeah, I would later on DJ as that character with a cloak on and pantomime in front of microphones. And yeah, it was a weird, it was kind of like the character I used to find my independence as a performer. I don't, obviously I don't dress like I'm in my day-to-day. I don't go to the store dressed like them. Although now I think I should.
Oh my gosh. He would be a really interesting Tony Clifton to have, you know, like Andy Kaufman's Tony Clifton. Yours is Old Boy. Oh my God,
that would be amazing. I should start like reading people's tarot as Old Boy, as Old Boy. And,
oh. Oh my gosh.
But it won't be me. Yeah. It'll be someone else dressed as him.
Yeah, that becomes part of the process too, where you never know when, but you're going to have the Old Boy initiation. Mm. But it's funny thinking about, because it's like a prescient metaphor exercise way of kind of looking at things, because I've been thinking a lot about demons and daemons and dreams and all of these apparitions of mind space and how they can appear. And I guess it kind of ties to the devil card too, but you know, these exercises that help us get over a fear in a weird way. It is like a form of chaos magic.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think in the spirit of chaos magic with no causal relation to whatever rituals one performs, had done something that that had given me the words "I'm born," I think like maybe a few days before Richie asked me to do this project, which is, you know, Old Boy being birthed from a canvas. So yeah, a little bit of conceptual rhyming there. Nothing scientifically proven, of course, but
well, science, I mean, really, this is the thing that too with science, like everything is always plausible, right? It's like truth is not a finite thing, is it? I mean, that I think with it, that's a good way to kind of go about life, is that whatever you're playing with, whatever you're looking into, it can be plausible and mutable and nebulous. There's no finite.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Always worth throwing through the scientific method. But usually you could always put meaning to something and make it worth your while, even if it isn't quantifiable.
Yeah.
If that's one way.
But how do you quantify a feeling, you know? Like,
I'm sure someone could be like, oh, like brain neurons, dopamine firing off, crazy stuff, but I'm clearly a scientist.
Yes, this is me too.
But no, I feel you on that. I think depending on what standpoint you take on things like magic with a K, I think you could only walk away with a meaningful experience the more feeling and meaning you put into something, even if it means nothing to you, you know, a month or a year later or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's that's the interesting thing about these things. I mean, it's like magic can be its own mind mandala, right? Where in the moment, there's so much feeling and color and idea, but wipe it away when the desired result is achieved, or maybe the other thing emerges that you realize you never knew you needed.
Right.
Oh, so cool. Yeah.
So cool, yeah.
So speaking of like magic and all the things that we're talking about, like, have you found any books in particular that like help kind of ground it down, or maybe like easier to relate to, or kind of like an elevated scale of like, here's the entry point, here's if you want to go deeper, here's the deepest.
I don't think I take to magic that well. In its classical ceremonial form, I did like Phil Hines' Condensed Chaos as like a reference point as to where people can take magic or chaos magic while still being humorous about it. I don't use it as like a tome, and I'm not too dogmatic about it, as I'm sure you're not supposed to be. But that seems to be a book that put it into perspective for me of how individual it can get. But I mean, I think like reading Crowley and seeing those rituals, they seem fun. Like if you can get a group of people together to like hold wands and point northwest and say all these words and, you know, make a ritual out of it, or make a day out of it. Yeah, it seems fun, but I think I'm a little bit too lazy for ceremonial magic.
Yeah. Yeah, I lack the proper discipline to do it often. I find myself more connected to the chaos aspect of magic as a practice. Yeah.
And I think it's akin to like learning to play a cover or writing your own song. You know, if magic is a weird art form that you can kind of you can create your own lyrics and you can make your own rituals and you can do what works for you and then throw away something when it doesn't work. But you can learn, you know, you can learn a Beatles song and play it note for note and like learn, oh, so like, why did they choose this melody? Or, oh, this chord makes me feel this way. You know, there's like institutional memory in ceremonial magic. But I think that, I think there are people, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, people like us that like writing our own stuff more than learning the classics.
Yeah. Totally. I think, yeah, I've definitely been like, all right. I think mostly because my grandmother was into Crowley and like, I don't know. I respect the rules, but I think in some ways it's, we have live in a universe of infinite possibility and permutation and iteration. I'd rather kind of create my own rules for my own sure. mind and let it mirror out.
You're genetically predisposed to Crowley, so you already have in your DNA. You have nothing to worry about. You don't have to learn that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Talk about people being like, is that the devil?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm the devil. That's, is that cool?
Yeah. Yep, that's me. Yeah, I mean, he's a polarizing character. If you can get beyond the PR aspect and look to his words, there is a lot of potency there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, his career and his life is an art form. So yeah.
I think I especially relate to the fact that, you know, his wife was spent time channeling, you know, like the fact that they were working with that process and channeling like these other entities.
Yeah. Yeah, that probably hits home with you. You have channeled in the past. Yeah. Right?
Do you remember when I channeled for you?
I do. I think I still have it written down somewhere.
Oh, wow. I wonder, because it was such a, going into that space was like almost like trance-like. I almost felt like it was like a form of hypnosis. So I'd be really curious to see how it unfolded or how it you relate to it now or how accurate it was.
Same. Yeah. I'm probably going to go look for this after we talk. Because it's, I can picture the notepad in my head, and I think it's in a specific box in my attic. So,
I can't wait to hear. Cool.
Have you channeled recently? Or
I actually haven't. I haven't channeled since 2016.
Okay.
But it was interesting because a lot of the channeling, you know, and I did one of the SoloCast episodes about like what we had gotten back in like 2014 about what would happen in 2019 and 2020, mm-hmm. and a lot of it was very spooky, accurate. Just about what this time would feel like, what to expect, how to kind of navigate it. But then, you know, with anything, again, like take what resonates, discard what doesn't. And I think a lot of why I stopped is because some of it was just so incredible and potent and spot on. And then other felt like almost like I was being led on a wild goose chase and it was just like word salad. So I didn't want to start feeling like I was crazy. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I just got to a point with it where I wanted to become more self-reliant and not keep going into these trance-like states because I don't want to go too deep off, too far off the deep end and become like Bashar or Abraham or one of those people or start drinking my own Kool-Aid so much. So, yeah. Yeah. Some of it was like really... I'd love to believe that this is my life path and purpose, but that also feels like a little suspect. And then when you think, you know, being someone who loves like esoteric information and occult portals and, you know, thinking about like jinn and all these like disembodied spirits and maybe it wasn't good or bad. Maybe it was just indifferent and kind of like getting a kick out of puppeting me for a bit. I don't know.
Sure. I guess that's definitely the risk. That's what interests me the most is like people who can channel and still be grounded, you know, and be able to like how you're talking about it now in retrospect, where it's like some of it was kind of cool and some of it was crazy, you know, insane.
But I mean, the thing that I take away from it really is that the everything that was said and in that 3-year period was be a good person. Be good to your fellow man, be good to yourself, take care of your body, like love that never deviated from those central tenets. So all the other word salad and foreign languages, and it told me at one point that Richie was a djinn and this was his first life on Earth. And I remember the name that we asked was like, it came out so, it was like, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, it's good memories and it's also a good exercise in discernment, because I think especially with the fact that New Age spirituality has become so much more popular and people are really like tapping into those ineffable realms, it can be really easy to get lost deep down the rabbit hole and lose yourself in the process. So it's good to know when to close the chapter and just maybe meditate a little more and see what comes through there.
Sure. As you're talking, I feel like you, and this might be a tangent, mm-hmm. but I feel like you sitting in on someone who believes they're channeling would be like extremely useful. Like you being like a channeling babysitter to make sure like they don't go off the deep end, they don't drink the Kool-Aid, but at least get like the catharsis from that trance-like experience.
That's actually a great idea.
Yeah, like because like you said, New Age stuff, it's like, you know, it's taking a form like it hasn't before. And it isn't something that, I guess the term I want to say like it shouldn't be toyed with, but not in the magical spooky way, in like the psychological don't go off the deep end way, you know, like the kind of the realist, the realist psychological way.
Completely. Yeah, don't go too far off the deep end, change your name, start wearing weird costumes and like really completely lose
yourself. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh yeah.
But then on the other hand, don't take advantage. I think one of the things I think that left a really bad taste in my mouth and why I stopped doing oracle card readings publicly for a while is the summer that I was doing them, offering them at the bookshop I was working at, I sat in on somebody who claimed to not believe in any of that stuff, mm-hmm. over and over again saying they didn't believe in it. They hosted a seance and I just was sitting there and I'm like, this is something that I take very seriously. This is something that like it or not, whatever, wherever I sit with it, my whole entire life, I've had dreams. They come true. I've been struggling with my own intuition since I was a child because it can be overwhelming. And this is a person that says they don't believe. And now they're running a seance and charging people to talk to their dead loved ones. And I sat in on it and I was like, nope. I can't charge for this right now. I can't support this. So that was like a big moment for me of just the charlatans that are just like charging exorbitant amounts of money to prey on people's insecurities and loss.
Yeah, it's wildly predatory and it's scary, you know. Monetizing spiritualism, I mean, we're going back thousands of years now, like it's usually ended pretty badly.
Yeah,
for people.
Definitely. But I think there's something potent. I keep saying potent. I think that's like my new buzzword because it's like evocative of a feeling, right?
Yeah. But own it. I like it.
Channeling it into art or an exercise or a community or something where you are receiving a new understanding of yourself, but then also walking away with a new feeling in the heart or a really special memory or a new way of understanding and navigating the world better. And then, you know, having this tangible piece of artwork or a piece of music that really lifts you up or, you know, an experience. Those are the things that make it like, okay, this is the channel that I want to flow towards.
Yeah. And I think we can find that with a more like naturalistic view of things if we couple it with a more naturalistic view, where we could say, you know, people love gambling. People love taking chances and uncertainty. It gets us excited. That fires off endorphins and dopamine. And then when we receive information in that state, we're more likely to retain it and work with it. So, I mean, like if we put that into the context of things like tarot or like seances, if we know we're going into it, knowing that we're going to be in a suggestible state, and that things can be simultaneously both real and not real, it won't be as predatory. It'll be more of an experience. You know, we don't go into the movies being like, that didn't really happen. That was just a screen. Like, no, we're paying to see a movie. we're paying to see actors do a thing. And, on a, you know, not actually in front of us, but, you know, pixels or projectors or whatever. Like, it's simultaneously real and not real. So I think if we can put it in the context of our subjective perception and know that we're not gambling with currency, we're gambling with, you know, brain chemicals, and we're gambling with concepts and, you know, loosely based on therapy, I think we'd be in a safer spot than, you know, charging for false seances. That's nuts.
yeah, that was. But I love how you articulated that, Mike. That was spot on, because it can be a therapeutic exercise and an enjoyable experience, like going to the cinema.
Yeah, well, thanks. And I, you know, it comes from a place of heartbreak. Like, it hurts me to know that, like, someone like, and I've encountered many people who go down the path of, like, you know, reading people's astrology charts, and, you know, you with channeling or tarot or oracle. It's like you get sucked out of that path and disheartened because you see people just blatantly, like, lying for monetary gain, and drinking their own Kool-Aid to a point where, you know, it's this strange cycle of predatory behavior and false hope. So, I mean, like, when anyone's passion gets ripped out from under them because they see how it's being abused, it's like, that sucks, man. Like, don't. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel for you that in that extent.
Clearly.
And, and I'm glad that I articulated it properly and didn't fumble over my words too much.
No, you sounded great. No, it was perfect. And it's, I mean, and there's also, you know, a big lesson through it all is, like, not letting those experiences jade you.
Yeah.
Or taint perception of, you know, intuition as an art form, tarot as an art form, slicing into time as a thing that could possibly be done, but also cannot. you know, there are good people out there, and the people, when you find them, it's just like finding these precious jewels, like yourself.
Oh, thanks.
And you know, like Richie, and I have this healer that I go to. I'd never been wowed by a medium before, because I generally have that little bit of jadedness experience, and just my own experience of, like, never, always kind of feeling icky, like taking money in exchange for, like, somebody's hopes, you know? But my healer is incredible. And she even says, she's like, come to me like twice a year, you know, like, please just space it out. Like, when people want to come back to her, like, she's just such a, I mean, I've never been wowed the way that this woman has wowed me. And she's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I respect that, where it's not like, this woman could probably get people coming to her like twice a month, but she's like, no, I won't allow that.
Right. That's great. I think that's responsible. And like I said before, it's like, it's kind of like gambling in a weird way. We love uncertainty so much that, I mean, even like, you know, going to the casino and going to a slot machine, like, there's something in our brains that even when we lose, we want to do it more. Even when we get bad news, we want to do it more. So, I mean, like, someone sitting down giving you this wealth of information about what could or couldn't happen in your life is, like, so exhilarating. So if someone takes that into their, if that's their profession, and they take that under their wing, and they're able to be responsible with it, I think that's a good thing. It's good.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, there's no mistakes, right? Like, all these things, they help you on the fool's journey to understanding the world, to throw in a tarot metaphor.
Yeah.
So, my God, this hour went by so fast. I'm so happy that you came on. Now's the time to plug all the things. Let us know where Best Tarot can be purchased and what's kind of coming up on the horizon, all that.
So I have like a, well,
oh,
that's it. That's all I got. See ya. Yeah, see ya. I have a web store. It's linked on all my social media stuff. My Instagram is @dadmagnet. There's a link in that to my store Envy. It's mikecastani.storeenvy.com. This sounds like I'm sending people through a labyrinth of clicking stuff to get to my tarot deck. awesome. And this is just a nice centerpiece of entertainment of me trying to explain where to find it.
all the links are going to be in the show notes anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Watch me flail.
at Dad Magnet.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll definitely do this again soon.
Yeah, I would love to. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.